Welcome, everyone. It is a beautiful day, and at the moment I'm speaking to you, I have to advise you that this is a pre-taped interview because I will be in Peru at the mountaintops hoping to see some craft or God knows what and wishing I were with you in person, but I'll be thinking of you while I'm up there. But tonight, in order to take care of you while I'm gone, this pre-taped interview with a really interesting character, his name is Joseph Palermo, I'll have him on in a minute. But before we begin the interview, I'd like to just inform you of a few things. Let's see, what have I got cooking here? First of all, of course, the Peru trip is off and running. Other trips are coming up, so please watch my website at www.therianrevelations.net. And as always, I want to thank you for spreading the word about the work because more and more people are hearing about this material, and I feel confident to say it's helping people lighten up and understand the process we're going through. That said, here we go. I'd like to introduce Joseph Palermo. I really don't know him that well yet, but I'm sure by the end of this interview we're going to be really good friends because I know we're on the same wavelength. So hi, Joseph. Thank you for being on air.
Hello, and thank you for having me on. First time that I'll be on internet radio from Italy. It's an outstanding thing you've done. Thank you.
Isn't this an amazing program? This is BBS Radio. They can interview anyone anywhere in the world within reason from any host anywhere in the world within reason, and that doesn't include Peru because God knows where I'll be, and I doubt I'll... I'm actually hoping I won't have a signal where I'll be.
It sounds like you've got a beautiful thing planned there.
Yeah, we do. We're going up with, I've got about 40 people in this group, and I'm joining forces with Kathy Dorr, who's an expert on Peru, and we're going up to celebrate Pachamama and discover what's waiting for us. And, gee, I've got a feeling we're going to see some crafts. But I'm
wow.
sure we'll be talking about that during this hour together.
What an opportunity. Fantastic.
So tell me a little bit about yourself and for the audience. The reason why I was interested in talking with you was your allusion to your research on chupacabra. Did I pronounce
chupacabra.
It right? Chupacabra.
Yes.
Chupacabra. Which
chupacabra.
Is a subject that interests me along with the many others that I'm sure we have in common. But
mm-hmm.
I'd like to just get a general bio on you and just a background so people know who we're talking to.
Who we're talking to? Well, born and bred in the middle of the United States in St. Louis, Missouri. General education, some college through Lindenwood Colleges.
Now, you don't have to give us your whole bio, personal bio.
No.
Tell us what, you know, how are you getting in, what work you're into as far as spirit goes and conspiracy, I think, and what you're up to.
Well, I tell you what, regarding spirituality, that actually evolved, believe it or not, I think, from my martial arts practices.
I do believe that. More and more people I'm discovering have reached a deep, profound awareness through martial arts.
Yes. Once you get past the physical aspect of it, and when you, there's just this step that occurs. It's very difficult to explain, but there's just this. Because you develop your awareness, you know, your awareness of your surroundings, your awareness of your body, your awareness of what, you know, just your awareness in general. It's almost kind of like doing a meditation. And then, of course,
well,
meditation.
I would say also that the kata form of karate, I'm sure, is almost like physical prayer.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So that's kind of what started me on my path to spirituality, I think. And then my sister Mary was into the Silva method. I just started meeting people, going to psychic fairs around the area, and it just I was very fortunate because at the time that I was developing that part of myself. That was in the early and mid-70s, there was, you know, I could have come across people that didn't have the best intentions or thought they were more than they were, and I was fortunate. I didn't come across those types of people. I came across people that seemed to be on the on the correct path and had good information. And it was that instinct, you know, that inner part of you that says, yes, this is right.
The guidance.
Yeah, the guidance, exactly.
Yeah.
And I've been fortunate that way.
So how did you get involved in the Chupacabra's phenomenon?
Well, the late friend of mine, Bob Buck, had brought it to my attention. There's a, are you all familiar with MUFON, the Mutual UFO Network?
I am, but go ahead and talk about, because I've had a number of people on that are, like, for example, I had Kathleen Martin on.
Okay.
And Stan Friedman. My show is about, it's Beyond the Matrix, it's about everything outside the box of convention.
Oh, beautiful. So, okay.
Okay, so I would like you to let it rip, because this is about helping people get past fear, get past doubt, get past the skepticism, and dare to let the imagination and thought fly out of the box of convention and soar with the eagles in the free thought zone.
That's beautiful. That's just beautiful.
So you don't have to hold back. You just go crazy and tell us all about
yours. Okay. Well, I was attending a MUFON meeting in Illinois, over here in the United States, and Bob had this fax illustration of this really bizarre-looking thing. It looked like a monster out of a grade B horror movie, you know. But he was saying that this is what's being reportedly being seen in Puerto Rico. So, because of the video production background that I've got, it became recommended to the person putting these tours together that I come along as the official videographer. And that's essentially how I got involved with it. The opportunity was there, my background was there, and it's like, well, okay, let's go see. Now, to be honest about it, I wasn't terribly convinced about it until I heard some on, and back at that time, Art Bell was doing Dreamland. Linda Moulton Howe was on the program talking about it. The television show Inside Edition did a piece on it. And there was even a small piece in the Wall Street Journal, of all places.
That surprises me.
Well, it was there because of the financial impact because of the agricultural animals being killed.
Mm-hmm.
People were losing, you know, $1,500 a week because something was going on to their property and killing their sheep, killing their chickens, killing their prize bulls. Something very bizarre was going on.
You're talking about specific to Puerto Rico?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Pinovenes, Puerto Rico. Yeah, that's where it started. And then you started having stories coming out of Miami, Florida. You had stories coming out of, well, pretty much any of the southern coastal areas of the United States. Some in Mexico.
I didn't know you've got reports. Let me interject here that you've got reports of chupacabras in Miami.
Yes.
Whoa!
Yes, that was early on. Right,
okay.
Right about the time that I was hearing about it that would have been 1995, there were reports and, alleged footprints, but I don't think those were. The more I've got a pretty decent physical description of the chupacabra, and they don't. There's no pads on the feet. They have three toes and three fingers. Both the toes and the fingers have claws. And as Madeline Tolentino was very, very adamant about, she said, "Not nails, claws." And the way she shaped it was almost like, well, are these like talons of an eagle or something? Or, you know, this creature is extremely strange. First off, it violates all of the laws of biology. It's supposed to have hair and feathers and scales. In biology, that doesn't happen.
Mm-hmm. On earthly biology.
But, you know, according to science anyway. This thing has the body of a kangaroo, essentially, very powerful upper legs, but then goes down into thinner lower legs with, like I say, the three toes on them, and very small, scrawny arms with the three fingers on the hands. a head that has been likened to, for those of the listening audience that understand ufology, a head likened to a gray alien mm-hmm. being.
Don't worry, my audience knows the term gray.
Okay, good. Eyes very similar to that of a gray, but almost a little bit more wraparound, like from the bridge of a nose all the way around to the temple. And in fact, Madeline Tolentino had indicated in her interview, she's eyewitnessed it very closely. She was within probably 3 feet of one of these things. And she said that even though it was facing forward, she got the idea that if it wanted to, it could roll its eye to the side of its head and see her. Kind of like...
Hold on a minute. Now, who is Madeline, and how did she get that close to a chupacabra?
Okay, Madeline Tolentino is a delightful woman from Canovanas, Puerto Rico. And this is back in February of 96 when we got all these interviews, when we actually made an expedition to Puerto Rico in search of not just the chupacabra, but there's a lot of UFO activity, a lot of alien activity, a lot of paranormal activity that goes on in Puerto Rico. And she and her husband/boyfriend, I'm not sure, Jose Miguel Agosto, we interviewed both of those people, and she was getting ready. It was broad daylight, probably around 1 o'clock in the afternoon. She was stepping out of one of the town shops, getting ready to step down onto the sidewalk. There's like two steps and then the sidewalk. And as she hit the first step, she saw this thing walking on two legs, just kind of walking down the sidewalk. Minding its own business.
Whoa!
You know, it was about 4 foot tall. And, I mean, what does anybody normally do? You're out doing your thing, and you come out the store, and suddenly you see this thing.
In broad daylight.
I'm sorry?
In broad daylight.
In broad daylight. The eyes were jet black, by the way, in broad daylight. This thing has been seen at night, and its eyes... Here's a real kicker. Its eyes not only are red, but the eyes project a light. Not reflect a light, project a light, like a flashlight.
That's not unpleasant sounding.
I don't know any creature on this planet that does that.
Yeah, creature.
Right. Yeah, see, you caught that, didn't you? Any natural creature. Yeah, very good. Very good.
In one of my books, I've written about chupacabras too, so I'm not a newcomer to this subject, which is the reason why I wanted you to come on.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Now, something I'd like to clear up for your listening audience, in case there's any confusion. There's been, in the last year, a lot of reports of chupacabras from Texas. Here in the States. Are you familiar with that?
Activity in Texas,
Texas
no. My information is pretty much limited to Puerto Rico.
Okay.
Like, I didn't know that there were reports from Miami.
Okay, fair enough. There's been a lot of hoopla about these things being seen in Texas, and I'm here to tell you and your listeners that although... they are very strange-looking canines. They look like coyotes or wolves or something. These are not chupacabra in the sense of Puerto Rico anyway. They just are not. They're obviously from the canine family, they could be animals that have been experimented on, but they don't hold any of the characteristics of the chupacabra of Puerto Rico.
And so you're talking about there have been reports in Texas of strange dog-like creatures that are attacking.
Right, right.
Yeah, no, I'm not up on that at all. Although
so
I did hear about this horrible-looking, strange, monster-esque creature that washed up on, was it Sag Harbor?
Montauk.
Great place
yes.
for something to wash up.
For those of us who are familiar with the things month, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that thing, and that's a strange thing. That's such a strange thing that we've got this really strange, bizarre canine showing up in Texas, and we've got this really bizarre looking, I mean, to me, it looked real, the pictures that I saw. Now, what it is, that's an entirely different question. But
well, let's be honest, Joseph. I mean, I don't think that it should be any shock to anyone that the government, or maybe not even only the government, is performing strange genetic experiments on animals, including us.
Oh, yeah. Oh, well, now if you want to go there.
It's called Beyond the Matrix.
That's right, Beyond the Matrix. You got it. You got it.
Obviously, pardon?
I said you're absolutely right.
We know that this is a high probability that what we're seeing here is, you know, gee willikers, bad experiments gone wrong. And, you know, as far as that animal washing up on the beach, God, I mean, this could have been just a project that was disposed of badly.
Sure.
Very horrifying to think of this. But then, you know, I think it's pretty very innocent or even a little, what's the word I'm looking for? Naive of us to think that these experiments are not going on.
Right, right. Yeah,
of Chupacabra, this is just the question that I've got for you, and I'm sure you've got for me, is, now, are we talking about some alien life form? Because I've heard about the airport, the strange crate, the Chupacabra coming out, people witnessing it, blah, blah, blah. So are we talking about an alien scary creature, or are we talking about a potential genetic creature? But nonetheless, this creature is out and about. Would you be comfortable agreeing with that?
Yeah, I would be comfortable agreeing with that. Let me tell you what this thing does to animals, and that might get us on a path towards identification. What this thing does, I believe it grabs the animal. Because there are the first classical, you know, appearance of the chupacabra attack are all these puncture wounds on the throat of the animal. Well, there's a veterinary, Dr. Carlos Soto, back at that time had analyzed or done necropsies on like over 2,000 animals that this thing is supposed to have killed. And one of the interesting points that he makes is there is no saliva to be found in any of the puncture wounds. So, if obviously it's not biting the creatures, it must be using the claws it has to grab at the animal, thus causing the puncture wounds. Okay? Then it's got this very flaccid long tongue. Now, there have been eyewitnesses seeing this, and speculation has it, because here's what's happened. When Dr. Soto would start peeling away the layers of skin around the one puncture wound, he might go down 5 or 6 or 7 layers and then find 4 more puncture wounds going into the animal that did not have any outer skin trauma. So in other words, this thing makes the puncture wound with its claws, puts the tongue in, this is my speculation, puts the tongue in, goes down a few layers of skin, and then begins boring into the animal's body from that point. And when Dr. Soto has gone all the way through this, he said, you know, one of these holes may lead, for example, to the heart, and strips of the heart muscle may be removed. One may go to the liver. Strips of the liver may have been removed. One may go to the stomach, part of the stomach. It's like, what? What?
Yeah. Has he found these in dissecting these animals, has he actually found this to be true?
Yes. Yes.
Oh, boy.
Yes. The only speculation is what instrument is used to go into the animal. We're speculating it's the tongue, because this thing has been witnessed to have a tongue like an anteater or a lizard, you know, flip it out of that, maybe like a snake. So there's that. Secondly, there must be some agent introduced to the blood of the animal, because in many cases, the animals never go into rigor mortis. Thirdly.
What happens?
We don't know. We don't know.
So you're suggesting there's some agent introduced to the blood that prevents rigor mortis, but to what end? I mean, what happens to these? Why hasn't there been a carcass found of this chupacabra, first of all?
Well, why hasn't there been a carcass found? I can tell you that we are aware. Now, I have to take the police department of Canovanas seriously, because they are law enforcement. You know, they have no reason to lie. We were trying to investigate the story of a homicide detective that is alleged to have come across the chupacabra attacking his Doberman Pinscher. And he went and grabbed a service revolver, came back, and popped this thing. He said that, the story goes that he said it rolled backwards a couple of times, got up on its feet, took a couple of hops, went up onto a palm tree, and disappeared over the fence.
Oh, my God.
He hit this thing.
Okay, let me interrupt you for a minute, because sometimes people come in late, and they don't know who I'm talking to. So if you just come in. I've got Joseph Palermo on. We're talking about Chupa, the creepy chupacabras. Joe is a video production expert. And Joseph, before we go on with our interview, do you have a website where people can find out more about what we're talking about?
Sure. They can go to www.ICS, that's Ivan Thomas Stephen, -DMS, as in David Michael Stephen, .com.
Okay, and there it talks about what we're talking about now.
Sure.
Okay, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I had to take a breather with the concept of this nasty number that, you know, this is almost like a monster Superman kind of caricature, but it's for real, which is intense. Okay,
yeah,
back to your story. So the policeman said he shoots this chupacabra.
He shot this thing point blank range, yeah. Point blank.
And then it hops over the tree and disappears.
Yeah, I mean, apparently it also, when he hit it, there was a spray of blood on the wall of his garage that before he went in, he washed it off, dried it down, and put primer or something on it to cover it up. He was so scared.
But as a policeman, doesn't it make sense that he would have tried to take a sample of it?
Well, that's a good question. I think what we have, and this is true of almost any phenomena, we have police that are trained to deal with given situations. They're human. And anytime a human being is faced with something of this nature, they may not act in accordance with the way one thinks they should act. I don't know. I don't know why.
This is very true. This is very true. I'll tell you, I once was visited by some strange characters, which I don't think I should go into too much length.
Mm-hmm.
And they gave me something that had a an RDIF chip in it.
Okay.
That was very strange.
Yeah.
And if I had collected it, we might have had a very interesting sample for study, but I panicked and I tossed it. I regret it now, but at the time I just didn't like what I saw, and I threw it away.
Well, same thing's true with me. I mean, when I was 18, I had my first Bigfoot sighting.
Your what?
And Bigfoot. And
really?
Yes, ma'am.
Woo!
Yes, ma'am. I have encountered almost every kind of paranormal thing that there is to encounter.
Well, you're going to have to come on more than just once, I'm telling you right now.
Okay. I'd be happy to.
Okay, but tell me about your Bigfoot encounter, then we'll get back to Chuba.
Well, just in regards to gathering evidence, 6 months after I had my sighting here in the area, I was out with a couple of friends because there was snow on the ground, and we figured that might be the best way to find any tracks. So to make a very long story short, we found hair samples, two different kinds of hair samples, two different kinds of blood samples, put them in a baggie, took them to a local vet, he analyzed them, said, you know, one was definitely canine, the other one, he didn't know what it was, didn't want to know what it was, don't use my name involved in this, don't blah, blah, blah. So my friend had a friend of his at an animal research center in Arizona that we decided to ship the remainder of what we had to him. Now, being where I am now, I would never have shipped all the rest of that off.
Yeah.
I would have kept part of it. But I was 18, not 50.
Yeah.
You know, and
oh,
hopefully...
Something happens also. In this case of paranormal, it's I'm not sure it is paranormal. It's just conventional, let's say, sometimes.
Ooh, that's an interesting word. I'll have to think about it. I like that.
It's been invented right here on the radio.
Yes.
I mean, paraconventional from the point of view of just because we haven't got an explanation for it doesn't mean it doesn't exist in 3D versus
exactly.
Paranormal, what we refer to as experiences outside of our sensate reality, if that makes any sense at all.
It makes perfect sense because actually I don't know if it's a suffix or what, but the term para simply means to the side of, something that's to the side of normal, paramilitary, paralegal, paranormal. So
yeah.
I don't have any problem understanding. Shoot, I mean, when you experience this stuff, you have to know it exists.
Yeah,
you
and
so,
I mean, like, you know, as these things are appearing more and more to us,
yes.
You know, it's getting, I don't want to get semantic here, but it's, like, you know, you found this very real 3D thing. And so I say it's kind of paraconventional from the point of view that, okay, I've got what I think is Bigfoot hair now. Why am I panicking? But, yeah, I think as we mature and we get more and more comfortable with these things happening, it's more and more easy for us to be more clinical about it.
Oh, absolutely.
But you get scared when these things happen.
Sure. I mean, the first time somebody encounters spirit, when spirit is able to actually push through or reach through into our 3D reality and touch you, the first time can be really spooky. You know, but after the fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth time, it's like, okay, you want my attention, what is it you want?
Just make sure you're asking the right spirit.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Well, you know, you work with the white light, you protect yourself, and you know,
you've got that right.
You know, and you know
I mean, I still always never take that for granted because so many people do ask for contact or some kind of manifestation, never, sometimes not remembering that you better make sure and clear it first, that only the highest intention comes through.
That is so true, Patricia.
Because
it does
come through. Okay, so back to the chupacabra.
Okay, let's see.
Now, when you went on this journey, are you going to tell me that you actually got footage of a chupacabra?
So unfortunate, no, I cannot tell you that. I wish I could. And I'll tell you what, I was not, one of our phrases over here is I'm not a happy camper.
I haven't been away from the States that long that I've forgotten this expression.
Okay.
to George Bush Sr.
we were there for a week in Puerto Rico. Friday, we visited the mayor's office, Jose Soto, and that's where we were trying to get a line on the homicide detective that allegedly shot one of these things. And in the meantime, a call came through from the civil defense that they were being dispatched to go on a chupacabra killing report. And we were there. So it was like, can we go with you? And they said, sure. So,
that's good timing. Now, talk about being in the right place at the right time.
Exactly. So we followed the civil defense vehicle into this neighborhood, and the homeowner wasn't there yet, so we were kind of very lightly, you know, looking around to see what was going on. And according to the report, there were some rabbits that had been killed. Now, here's a very interesting thing, Patricia. The intelligence that this creature must have, because it went And, you know, I don't know, in Puerto Rico, they keep rabbit hutches like we have dog houses, you know, lined up, you know, in the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And this thing went over to the rabbit hutch, undid the hook and latch, opened the door, killed the animals, shut the door again, and relatched the door on the side.
No way.
Yeah. Yeah.
You saw this?
No. That's what was
recorded.
Because the person that was there at the house came out and found his... He had the rabbits in the hutch last night, and he comes out this morning, and they're dead. They're not out of the hutch on the ground. They're still in the hutch with the hutch door closed and locked.
Now, how does it look like it's a tuba attack?
Because of the puncture wounds.
Okay. So has the animal been drained of its blood?
Okay, I'm glad you brought that up, because here's the deal. None of the animals have truly been drained of blood. That's a fallacy. Dr. Soto reports of all the animals brought to him, some had the amount of blood they should, some had a lesser amount than they should, but he never received an animal that was drained of blood. That's,
okay.
I think, part of the folklore and the exaggeration. You know,
well, sure. I mean, chupacabras, doesn't it mean blood sucker?
Goat sucker, yes.
Goat sucker, yeah.
Yes. And, you know, you have someone who gets up in the morning and finds their goat's dead and finds some blood around the wound. People are assuming that this thing was sucking blood. But apparently not. Chupacabra probably is not the best description of whatever this creature is. And while we're on that subject, people just start, you know, once the chupacabra concept became high profile, people up and down the coast of the United States, people in South America, people all over the world, you know, they wake up and they find their animal dead. Immediately they're screaming chupacabra. If they wake up, their animal's dead, there's puncture wounds of some sort. Well, it could have been a dog. It could have been a feral dog. It could have been something else. But the very first thing they wanted to do was yell chupacabra. And then, of course, as a researcher, you have to filter through all that. You know,
right.
What's a real chupacabra attack? What's not? And, I mean, this thing just ballooned, like, almost overnight. When we got back from Puerto Rico, every Sunday night on Dreamland, somebody was talking about it. And that went on for like 6 months. This thing achieved an incredible high profile. Okay, the reason I was talking about going to that neighborhood, what Millie, the owner of the home, did tell us, she got there about half hour after we got there, what she did tell us was that the chupacabra had been coming to this neighborhood almost every night for 4 months. Almost every night for 4 months. And
so were there dead
that,
animals every night for 4 months?
Not necessarily. It had been seen. And I don't think
seen,
there was
okay.
a kill. In fact, she felt that she knew where there was a nest where these things laid down. She had witnessed one laying in this area of grass that was swirled. And I'll tell you what, Millie's a gutsy gal. She's a stocky,
robust
gal. I
would say so, because I wouldn't be going to any chupacabra nest.
Oh, she's got her machete. She came to the house.
Oh,
yeah, she came to the, she came to the house to talk to us, and she's carrying her machete. She's this adorable, curly-haired, blonde, rotund woman, probably at that time maybe 45, maybe 50. She's not afraid of anything. She got that machete. She'll take on anything. And
you're painting a picture of this beautiful little blonde, strong woman
mm-hmm.
going out into the grassy swirls with a machete after a nest of chupacabras.
After a chupacabra nest, anyway. Yeah, I mean,
sounds like more science fiction than the chupacabra itself.
Well, she showed us the nest. She showed us the area, and what had happened, and this is not the first time this is reported. apparently chupacabra nests are built, quote unquote, if I can use that term, very much like deer. When they lay down, they'll create this swirl of grass before they lay down. And, you know, and that's what had been found on some properties that had ongoing chupacabra activity. And she got this huge piece of sheet metal and laid it down, or had somebody bring it over and lay it down on this nest, hoping that it would make the chupacabra go away. But Billy had said she'd seen the chupacabra enough. She had seen 3.5 to 4 foot tall. She said those were the kids. Then she would see 5 foot tall ones. She said those are the mamas. And 6 foot tall ones. She said those are daddies. Now, keep in mind, I was the shooter on this trip. My job was to document, you know, videotape, all that kind of thing. It wasn't until I was back here in the States creating my documentary from all that footage, which is also available on my website, that I heard her say that on the soundtrack. And I'm sitting there thinking, okay, and at one point we were out on a mountainside with nothing looking for these things. What the hell?
That doesn't sound very smart. No offense, Joseph.
I had to pick my chin up back off. I was like, oh, my God, we could have been... Well, okay, which brings us to another point. Regardless of
which
what
was bringing
did,
me to a question, of course, what you're going to raise now, which was, have humans been attacked?
Yes, we are on the same page. That's delightful.
Yes, it is.
No,
nice.
Humans have not. Humans have not been attacked. This thing has only attacked animals, both domestic and agricultural.
Okay. So
you know,
far.
Madeline got within 3 feet of this thing. It didn't do anything to her. In fact, it started across the street away from her. It just happened that her husband's garage was across the street, you know, service station. And one of his workers, Dito, was out there, and she screamed to Dito, grab it. And Dito put on a pair of work gloves and approached it, and apparently it hissed, showed its fangs, and then started running towards a couple homes. You know, it's between Madeline and Dito, and it kind of made this left-angle turn and took off. And she said that the legs were moving so fast, it looked like it was more floating. So that's how fast this thing can move its legs, like a roadrunner, like a bird.
Sorry to laugh, but
no.
You mean to tell me that this person, Dito, actually put on gloves with the idea of catching this thing?
Apparently he was small enough to try to do that.
Well, that's a very courageous individual.
Yes.
But I guess, you know, in the bizarreness of the moment, you're not thinking, you're just reacting.
Well, sure. I mean, you know, okay, take me for example. My job at that point was to document. And Patricia, I guarantee you, if that thing had shown its face, I would have had my camera going after it. That's my training. That's what I do. You know, now, would I have run right up within 2 feet of it to look down its throat? No. You know, but I want to get good image of whatever I'm going after. And
but
I
who knows? I mean, if you ran across it and it wasn't hissing and it was, you know, you might have had the, who knows what would happen in that moment.
Exactly. Exactly. And I would hope that my martial arts training would also help give me the strength and the focus to maintain and do what I need to do in a situation like that. I've thought about that a lot.
But I would ask you please not to contemplate giving a karate chop to a chupacabra.
No.
Be wise.
No. I'm with you
well,
on that.
I'm not trying
to
make light of this because I consider this a very, very important situation, but it's just this conversation we're having is rendering itself to a little humorous input.
That's fine. That's great. You know, you have to in this field. If we don't allow ourselves a little bit of fun, a little bit of, you know, you can, it's like watching a movie that's too intense. If you don't have that scene that breaks that intensity, you just come out, you know, after you've seen it, just wiped out. You have to have some levity. You have to be able to have a little bit of fun with this. Otherwise, it's just, it's too intense.
Well, I'm sure the people that this is happening to are not laughing about it. So we have this momentary levity about it. But in truth, this is a very real, at least it seems to be a very real phenomenon happening to a lot of people. And there is a lot of concurrence. Like you said, even police are reporting it. So you've got police reporting a phenomenon. You'd have to be looking at some kind of a plot. Because it was, let's say that we people outside the zone of credibility, mm-hmm. and I hope you don't mind me including you in this, but I'm talking about people who are not officials, can be teased about our views and opinions. But police, like you said, are trained to give accurate reporting.
Right.
So back to the scene in Puerto Rico. Is this still happening now?
You know, I haven't, the big story died down a number of years ago, and I haven't heard anything really outside of this silliness in Texas about it. Now, I was on, are you familiar, you see the History Channel once in a while?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Are you familiar with a program called Monster Quest?
Yes, I am.
Okay. A few months ago, I was asked to be on Monster Quest, on the segment on Chupacabra. And the part that I was talking about on that program was the Puerto Rico part. The producers of the show did go to Canovanas, but they couldn't get anybody to talk to them at all. They couldn't get Mayor Soto to talk to them. They couldn't get the veterinary, Dr. Carlos Soto. They couldn't get anybody to talk to them about this. They said, we're tired of talking about it. Now, I don't know if
they're tired of talking about it, or are they afraid?
Well, no, that's a good question. I think that's a very good question, because I'll let you and your listeners in on something very interesting that happened with me on this. After we got back to the States and I did my first edition documentary on this, I sent a copy of it to the man that was showing us around in down there, Jorge Martin, and it came back. It was like return to sender. And I thought, well, let me check the address. It's the right address. And I asked a few other people that had been on our team if they'd heard from Jorge, and they all said no. You know, some people tried to call him. Some people tried to send him a thank you note for you know, showing us around and that. Nothing. They cut off all communication. Now, I know that Jorge still works with Fate magazine. I contacted the publishers of Fate magazine to get an email saying, you know, I was in Puerto Rico, did this documentary in the Chupacabra, would like to get a hold of Jorge, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I got an email from Jorge saying, this is Jorge, what can I do for you? And I emailed him. Never heard a word. So I don't know if after we were there, because we were being watched while we were there. We were being watched. We know this. There is a rainforest north of Canovanas, I believe, called El Yunque Rainforest. And when you go into this rainforest, there's a big old sign on the front of it that very distinctly says, this is an experimental rainforest. And and unfortunately, we did have to spend part of the night in that rainforest instead of being at that location where that chupacabra had been coming every night.
Wait a minute.
What
were you doing? Oh, you are a man after my own heart. What were you doing sleeping in an experimental rainforest in Puerto Rico?
Okay, first, let me say it was not my idea to do this. If I had my druthers, my happy butt would have been back there in that neighborhood at 3 o'clock in the morning, hoping to get footage of this creature. But no, I got to be in the rainforest because one of the people on the trip, and I'll keep his name to myself in his memory, for whatever reason believed that he was going to meet up with Palladians that night, and they were going to impart information that was going to help him save the planet.
Okay.
That's why we were... Now, let me also say, I am not saying that that kind of scenario can't happen.
Uh-huh.
Human beings have contact with extraterrestrials all over the place.
Uh-huh.
I have no problem believing that. But what this fellow thought was going to happen, no. No. This was not in this lifetime. No, it was not going to happen.
So you were in an experimental, which is nobody identified who said it was, that forest.
No, I have no idea who declared it that.
Yeah, well, we can read through the lines on that one so that we can stay on the air.
Sure.
Okay, and you were camping out with the idea that he was going to be in contact with the Pleiadians, and you were going to fully shoot with a camera a Chuba?
My whole deal was the Chupacabra. I did not pursue this man and the other guys that went with him into the rainforest. Now, I will tell you this. This is interesting. One of the many experiences that I do have is that I have every reason to believe that I am an abductee. Okay?
Oh.
Two of the times, I'm not the one that was taken. The people that were with me were the ones taken. One of the times, for all intents and purposes, I was knocked out by whomever. I was wide awake one moment. We were driving on the road, and all of a sudden I had this absolutely overwhelming need to go to sleep. And it made no sense to me at the time. It was almost like I passed out. So having had that experience, I'm now in Puerto Rico in this rainforest, and these guys have gone off to see what they could find, and I start getting the same feeling.
Oh, boy.
Somebody's trying to knock me out. Why, I don't know. All I know is I've got people here with me that didn't go to meet up with Palladians. They're here with me. I'm getting this feeling. I recognize this feeling. This is alien involved, and I'm fighting to stay awake. And a delightful young woman named Kim, who was on the trip with us, and very psychic as well, she kind of became my psychic sidekick on this thing. And I could be on for numerous other times with you talking about all the other stuff that went on with this trip, not just the trip.
No, you will be, trust me.
That's cool. So I'm feeling this. I'm telling Kim, they're trying to knock me out. Put a wall of energy around this. Do something, because I'm already starting to go. I'm trying to call the white light. I need your help. And we joined hands and we pursued it. We brought energy in, and I was just a skosh from going out. I maintained consciousness, but we fought it for seemed like 10-15 minutes, and then I was okay. And then about 5 minutes after that, the guys that went into the rainforest started coming out. Well, the first guy who thought he was going to meet aliens came running out. what? Where's the others? Huh? What others? The people that you went into the rainforest with. I don't know. We reached a point and it looked really weird and I freaked out. Oh, jeez. I wanted to slap him so hard.
Understandable.
And then another 10 minutes, the other guys finally made their way out. I mean, because we're talking, you know, at night, in a rainforest, with flashlights. The first guy that went in was the only one who had any experience or knowledge of where anything was in that immediate vicinity. So he takes off, leaves these guys out in nowhere, not knowing where they're at, or you know. was just, I'm like, okay, and why am I here instead of that neighborhood where I can get a, at least try to get video of the Chupacabra? Because I, you know, if I'd have gotten that, you know, boy, that could have opened some huge doors.
Yeah.
Well,
obviously there was a reason why you did that, but man, you know, I would be very interested in doing some traveling with you.
Wow, that'd be cool.
Because I put myself into some pretty interesting situations as well. I'm pretty fearless here.
Mm.
But I would not go into an experimental rainforest.
I was just following the pack.
Yeah, because I'm more than happy to meet up with and actually interested and excited about meeting up with life form from other planets. I'm not sure about the Chuba, but, you know, dudes from our own laboratories.
Right.
I prefer to stay out of their space.
Yeah.
So, you know, you watch yourself now, Joseph.
Oh, I do. I do. You know, since that time, you know, I've not gone after something in that manner. But I did have the fortune when I was in Tennessee in 2000 of getting a UFO on camera.
Really? When can we see that?
Well, I'll tell you what, for those who are interested, on my website, I do have what's called the USHA Report, and it's an online publication, $7 and change, and within this publication are links to videos that you download to your computer and then watch them, and I have my Chupacabra documentary in this publication. I've got the Star Child video that I did with Lloyd Pye. Are you familiar with the Star Child project?
No, I'm not.
Okay. Just in quick, because I know we're running on time here. Lloyd came into possession of two skulls. One skull, obviously human. The other skull, obviously not.
Okay,
and
yes. I'm not interrupting you because I want you to continue talking, but yes, I know exactly what you're talking about.
Okay, so you know what I'm talking about. Okay.
I've seen this skull. In fact, it's on your site.
Yeah, I've done a 30-minute piece on that, which is available through the USHA Report. And there's some
Go ahead and talk about it so that people know that what you're talking about.
Right, okay. Basic story, Chihuahua, New Mexico, back at the turn of the last century, a young girl that went to visit some relatives goes into this mine to play where she was told not to play, comes across a couple of skeletons kind of sticking up out of the ground. She digs them up. One's obviously human. The other one is much smaller and very strange looking. She gathers them into her basket, takes them home, but leaves them outside because she'll get in trouble if they find out where she got them. Overnight, there's a gully washer. The basket gets washed down the ravine. When she goes out the next morning, the only thing she can find are these two skulls. And she keeps them all of her life up to her deathbed. And then she, you know, gives them to somebody saying, I've never known what to do with these. See if you can find out what's going on with these. Those people contacted members of Texas MUFON. Those people then contacted Lloyd Pye because Lloyd Pye, one of his expertise is bones. He's also apparently a world expert on hominids, including Bigfoot. You might want to think about having him on the show. Because Lloyd, I love Lloyd. Lloyd is a wonderful guy. He's gone broke trying to research these skulls. But the one skull, you just look at it and you just know. This is
amazing.
A skull that's, it's either alien or alien human hybrid. One or the other. And the information that they keep getting more questions. They're not finding the answers.
Okay, so please give your website again where people can get this information.
Okay, www.I as in Ivan, T as in Thomas, S as in Stephen, - D as in David, M as in Michael, S as in Stephen.com.
And I want to remind everyone who's listening that people like us, like Joseph, like me, we we need your support, because doing this work requires coming up against a lot of obstruction. And the work that we're doing in the case of Joseph, putting out these videos, we need your support in order to keep doing the work. So please be generous. If this information interests you, get out there, get this information, contribute, so that he can go on with doing this important work.
That is such a beautiful thing to say, Patricia. Thank you.
Well,
thank
it's
you.
From the heart. I mean, you know, we're both working here trying to buck the system, and it's a toughie. But
yes,
I love
is.
You for your humor and your wisdom, and I'm just so thrilled that we connected. And I'm just wondering, you know, where else in the world do you travel? Where can I meet up with you?
Wow. Well, that's going to depend on and you know, in fact, I am working on getting investors and getting sponsors and all that. I've been pretty limited here to the States, but that could change. How often do you get over here to the States?
I don't enter the States anymore.
Oh, okay. All right. Well,
yeah.
You know, I've got a niece and a nephew that go to Rome on a regular basis, so, you know, maybe I can hitch a ride with one of those guys sometime and come over and we
there's
can actually...
There's plenty of investigating here, I'll tell you.
I'm sure there's something
well,
to investigate
to the,
in Rome.
I just came back from the crop circles. Have you been to the crop circles?
No, I haven't.
It might be something fun to do, so let's keep that in mind as we look forward to 2009, because it's going
okay,
to be
sounds good.
An intense
sounds
year,
good.
And I have a feeling that if the two of us get together, excuse the proverbial, but all hell will break loose.
I think you're right.
And by the way, if you get that feeling that you're starting to go, I'll protect you, because I've got a shield that'll knock your mind, your socks off.
Really?
Yeah, I really know how to make that shield. Okay, I won't elaborate on that because I don't want to invite any people that want to see how quickly they can knock it down. Listen, time is up already, Joseph. I can't believe it. This has been the fastest interview ever. It's been a delight having you on. People, this is Joseph Palermo. You heard his website. You've got to check out what he's doing. We're going to be talking with him again. We've got chupacabras. We've got abduction. We've got Bigfoot to talk about. We didn't even get close to, what do they call it? The animals that are found surgically
animal mutilation. Animal mutilation.
Thank you. Animal
right.
mutilation. I'm sure you've got something to say about that.
We've had that here, too.
Yeah. All right, Joseph, we're going to have to spend some time together talking at least. Thank you so much for coming on, and we'll have you back as soon as we can. In the meantime, you stay out of those forests now.
Oh, I will. Thank you, beautiful lady.
Okay, we need you doing your good work and helping illuminate people to what's going on this planet.
Well, I'll keep going as long as I can.
Okay, thank you for being on, everybody. As I said, I'm in Peru. Forgive me for bringing you this pre-recorded message, but in the meantime, you've had a chance to listen to Joseph. Next week, while I'm still in Peru, I'll have Stephen Mailer on. He is the author of Land of Osiris, a wonderful book in which he worked with Hakim, who I've already announced to you has left us and has gone on to other realms. So don't miss this interview, and it's a heart-to-heart talk with someone who was like a son to Hakim, and it's a memorial to this great indigenous leader. Okay. I'm off to go explore Pachamama. I send you my love. I'll talk to you soon. Don't forget, always dare to think beyond convention. Get yourselves out of that box and soar the eagles of the free thought zone. This is Patricia Corey saying bye-bye.